Hey, it's Doug. This is the little story time thing slash intro. Intro part's more important here because Carl is joining me back on this episode, but it's a greatest hit. This one was recorded in Leadville in 2023. Carl and I went on a writing retreat for the Lazy Book, which is still not done. There's a strong chance I've done zero work on it up to this point, even with strong encouragement from people to work on it. But I am working on being lazy and not following that drive to be overly productive. I am very, very skilled at that, so I have not done any work. That said, this is a cool episode, and it was fun to hang out with Carl. We got this pretty sweet house in Leadville, and it was fairly big. It was bigger than what we needed. I think we could have had like five more people there, and it was pretty cool. And there was a pool table, and there was a sauna like in the sort of back half of the place. So it was a cool spot. And yeah, we each had our own room. I think, like I said, there was plenty of room for other people, but it just happened to be the place that fit. It was very close to the main street. If people know Leadville, or you're thinking of visiting, like, you take a look at a map. We were just maybe not even a quarter of a mile from the main street. So very close, and you could walk up there and go to the shops, go to Melanzana, you know, check out the hoodies, or you could walk up the hill a little bit more or down the hill and be on just like hiking trails and stuff like that. So really good spot. We had a mailbag episode. I'm like, if we're out here working, we may as well, you know, do some episodes while we're here. So we recorded this mailbag episode. So pretty fun. Some of it's dated. Like Carl talks about Taylor Swift and the concert that he was looking at there. So a couple things that are dated, but I mean, this stuff holds true. And if not, like, we'll edit out the stuff that doesn't make sense. So you won't even know what happened. That said, if you want to support the show, there's a couple ways you could do it. I have been, you know, trying to make it easier / straightforward. If you want to support the show, try not to do ads again or having to advertise things that we don't want, which, yeah, again, odd. I've talked about this a couple times. I'm like, why are these podcasts advertising these products they don't like? It's tough to do. They got to make it work. But anyway, we have Mile High Fi merch. So if you need a shirt or hoodie with a asparagus on there, this is one of the few places you can get that. Products that I recommend, products that I literally use. So Chili Pad, Mint Mobile, Zero Shoes, Trust and Will, a couple other things like that. I also have this is a little bit newer, and I may have mentioned it to other people at this point or sent it out in the email list, but I have like a page over on Amazon where it's like products that I recommend. So that could be, maybe it's like the supplements that I take for fitness, or maybe it's the supplements that I take for sleep, or maybe it's the guitar equipment that I use or other stuff like that. So I'll put links to things that I actually use. So if you're curious, like what backpack does Doug use, there will be a link for that. It's a Mystery Ranch one, by the way. It's a pretty nice one out of the Bozeman, Montana area. And then you could also go to the Buy Me a Coffee page. There's exclusive content there if you want to check it out. And you could do a one-time donation, or you could give, like, you know, whatever you want per month. And that, when you give the monthly, you know, when you have the monthly membership, that's when you get the extra content most of the time. Although I appreciate everybody, so I usually send it to other folks too. But anyway, you could check it out if you want to help support the show, if you enjoy it and that sort of thing. So with that said, let's go back in time, back to a simpler time in 2023 when Carl was still on the show. We were going on weekend writing retreats and all that stuff. It was a different time. Thanks for checking it out. If you got any show topics or questions or anything like that, Doug@milehighfi.com. Now let's get to the show.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Mile High Fi podcast. I'm Carl Jensen with my co-host.
I'm Doug Huntington.
Doug, what's happening?
We are sitting in the governor's mansion in Leadville. So this is like a 100-plus-year-old house that we're in, and it's converted to an Airbnb. And it's where we've been writing for a few days.
Okay. So I guess I should have asked you this or realized this before, but this whole thing was the mansion for the governor of Colorado at some prior time?
Right. So I did a little research beforehand, and I think the mayor of Leadville, like in the late 1800s, eventually became the governor of the state. So I think this was his mansion when he lived in town. I was trying to find some more information, but I'm sure people could dig a little deeper and figure it out. But yeah, this whole house was the mansion of the governor, but probably not while he was governor.
Okay. So something I like to think about often and that I've read about is how good life is now, despite what you read on the news. I think Peter Attia was talking about it. He's like, the life of an average American is far better than the life of like the richest person in the world 200 years ago. If they got scraped, they could die. They didn't have indoor plumbing. Like life was shit back then for the richest person on earth. And I think of that right now because we're two knuckleheads and we're staying in this governor's mansion thing. And it wasn't even that expensive. Like, how crazy is that?
Yeah. And the thing is, it's pretty nice. Like, we haven't even used it because we were so busy writing. But we're using this table, and it's actually a pool table. So we have a pool table here we never even played. And there's a sauna. There's enough room to fit probably 4 or 5 more people. Something like that.
Not in the sauna.
Not in the sauna. It's a small sauna. Yeah. But yeah, it's a super nice place. Like it has some, I think the decorations fit the time period, but it wasn't, I don't know. It's pretty nice in here. Basically, I'm like, I would never decorate a place like this, but it fits what this place should look like, right?
Yeah. There has to be a name for it, like old school shitty or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like the original drapes are in here or something. It's all right. Yeah, but the sauna was cool. Did you ever get in there?
No, I never got in. I wanted to, but every time I went in, you were in there, so I never had a chance.
Yeah. I used it a few times, and yeah, it's pretty nice. I dig the sauna. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, I like to sauna nude, and one time I walked up there, sans clothes, and you were in there. I just turned around and walked back up. It was better for both of us that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it was awkward, but you know, it's what I signed up for.
Yeah. So before we get into today's show, and in today's show, by the way, we're going to answer reader questions. We're going to talk about some investment advice. We're going to talk about a conversation that Doug and I had about our siblings over dinner last night. And we're going to talk about the Camp Fies that we were just at. But before we get to that, I need to bring up one other quick thing because it's the bane of my existence in life right now. And we're in the governor's mansion, and I wish I knew the governor because he might be able to help me out with my current problem. Actually, I'm not sure. And that problem is two words, Taylor fucking Swift. I guess that's three words. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry for the bad language. Taylor Swift is a great person. We listened to 1989. I enjoy her music. But what happened, Doug, is my kid waited for like 13 hours in the sale when the tickets went for sale way back a couple months ago. And she was able to get one ticket. By then, all the seats together were sold out. So she got one ticket. The problem with this is that I have two children, and the other child would also really like to see Taylor Swift. So have you taken a look at what ticket prices cost for this spectacle?
I haven't, but I've been hearing it from other, you know, friends. Apparently, Taylor Swift is taking over the country. I hear it all over.
Yeah, I heard something like, to back up a second, her economic impact to the Denver area for the two shows will be like $50 to $100 million. So it's crazy, right? But anyway, I've been looking at tickets and the crappiest, worst seats, like behind the stage, obstructed view. So you're not going to see her. You're just going to be looking at a cement column the whole time. We're like $1,500. So last night I had some hope because let's see, what day is today? Today is Thursday. The concert is tomorrow. So last night, Wednesday night, I looked at tickets and I'm like, wow, they've kind of come down. Like you can get tickets for $1,000 and that's the cheapest I've ever seen them, which is great. And usually how these things work is the ticket prices continue to crash as you get closer to the show. So I had optimism for this morning, Doug, and then it was quickly dashed when I went online. The inventory was way down. It seems like a lot of tickets were gone and the prices were back up like $500. So my younger daughter might have to sit this one out.
So we have a question potentially coming up. Although, you know what? Scratch that. I think we pushed it to the next episode. All right. So I could ask it here. Hopefully not to derail us too much. So you've known for a very long time that you needed the ticket, right?
Yes.
How many hours have you put into looking at the pricing and trying to find the right price?
Yeah, I would say probably 4 to 6 hours. I did get some kind of app, which is supposed to track the tickets, but I don't think it works that well. So, and there's all these different sites. So I'm still logging on every day looking for these stupid tickets. I think I see where you're going with this, Doug, but go on.
Yeah. And I can't fault you for it, right? Because this is the first time you had to go through this. But we could all learn from your, in air quotes, mistake. So 4 to 6 hours, which I don't know if that's accurate, man. Could be more than that, but we'll go with the 4 to 6. How many hours have you been thinking about it?
Yeah, probably at least another 4 to 6. And it's kind of entertainment for me. It's amusing, or maybe that's the lie I tell myself to justify all the mental bandwidth I've spent on Taylor Swift.
Right. Yeah. So, and if, yeah, you get the point where I'm just like, if you were going to go, maybe you could have gotten them paid. I don't know. It's a lot. $1,800 for the additional ticket and then like not thought about it again. But yeah. I don't know. Was there some threshold where you're like, if it gets to this price, like when it got down to 1,000 last night, why didn't you get it then?
I think that was one of the crappier seats, like the obstructed view behind the thing. But still, that was the cheapest that crappy ticket had ever gone for. And I'm not sure. I mean, this brings up a bigger question. Like, so if that younger child was a super diehard Taylor Swift fan, I would have done it, but she isn't. I asked her to name like 10 songs and she got to like 4 and that was it. So she's a casual fan. I think she just wants to go for the spectacle of it, which I kind of admit would be interesting too. I'd go as well. But so if she was a hardcore fan, I would have blown the money on the ticket. But since she's not, I'm kind of hesitant.
Got it. Okay. So in a shocking turn, we'll be able to tie this in to one of the questions coming up. I didn't think it was going to work out like that, but you're trying to time the market here. By the way, none of this is financial or legal advice or any kind of advice at all. It's just entertainment. We're telling stories. So all this stuff we're going to be talking about, not financial advice, but you're trying to time the Taylor Swift market.
That is correct.
It's tough, huh?
Very tough.
Yeah. So you thought the prices were going to keep dropping until like showtime and maybe be really cheap.
Yeah. And I still have hope for that. Maybe not much hope because I saw how much the inventory went down even in the past 12 hours. And the sites try to screw with your mind too. Like they'll show you the tickets that are available and then they'll show you like all the tickets that have sold in the past 12 hours. Like, you dumbass, you should have bought this when you had it. And we've got like 2 left.
Yeah. Fucking Ticketmaster and all that shit, right?
Yeah. I hate them. Scalpers, StubHub. Ugh.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else on the show? I mean, we'll get an update soon. I'll know. I'll probably see you like posting stuff on Instagram where you're at the concert, like you're in there in some sort of, I don't know what Taylor Swift concert goers wear, but you'll be buying and trading stuff in the parking lot, right?
Yeah. My friendship bracelets or whatever they call them these days. What I try to do, Doug, and thinking on it now is I know some people who have gotten press passes. They've got a blog, so they must fool the organization into giving them a pass or whatever. And I don't think that would have worked. Like maybe 1% chance, but that would have been my Hail Mary, but it's too late now.
Yeah. For next time. All right. You want to hit the questions?
Yeah, let's do it. The first one came as a comment on my blog, 1500days.com. And this is from Ben. And he says, he asks, does it ever get any easier to ride the market swings mentally? Doug, do you have any initial thoughts on that?
Yes, definitely. I think in short, it does get easier. I know I've gone through a few market downturns, a few recessions and such. I started investing probably in the late 90s or so. The company that I worked for as an intern allowed us to, you know, open a 401k, do the stock purchase plan at a discount, whatever the normal kind of 15% discount. So I was doing that like immediately when I was 19. And I know the dot-com bubble got my attention. I didn't have much money in the market, but it felt like a lot to me then. And then again, during the Great Recession and just like investing in my early years, I made a mistake. I stopped investing because I didn't pull money out, but I stopped investing. And you and I have talked about that around the same period in the early 2000s, like we weren't seeing returns and I got nervous, so I stopped. And then as time has gone on and I see the market does recover, just like everyone said that it was going to, and I observed it myself and I felt some pain from not investing for a few years. Now you see it and it's going to be a few years, but I don't even look at my investments very often, probably less than I did when we first started recording the show. So I'm looking like maybe once every 4 to 6 months, something like that. I don't even know what's going on.
If you happen to hear in the news that the stock market had a very bad day, like, I don't know, some geopolitical event happened and the Dow had a historically bad day, do you go in there and look at it then, or do you still not care?
I might, but it's only like 50% of the time. The big thing is I know I won't do anything differently. So having more information, if I'm not going to do anything, isn't helpful for me. So I might take a look, but usually if I hear such news, I'm not in a spot where I can check. So I don't, and then I'll forget later. Luckily, my memory is going.
So I think you said something super important there. You said, if I'm not going to do anything, there's no point in looking. And I think that's really important because you shouldn't make a decision just because the market had a really good or bad day. And one of my points was to write the rules ahead of time when everything is calm and stick to those. And that aligns with what you said. Your rule is that you're not going to do anything, so therefore it's pointless to look at it. And you have that rule established in your head. So that was one of my thoughts. I agree with you with what you said about the experience too. We've both been through some rough things and I did freak out, but now it doesn't matter anymore. Another thing, I was looking at Brian Feraldi's tweets this morning, and he had a really good one. And he said, you make more in bull markets than you lose in bear markets, which is great. So that gives you the comfort that even if the market takes a huge dump, it's only a temporary thing. The way the market moves is up and to the right. It just is bumpy and it's not going to be smooth. So if you know that, maybe you'll be a little bit better off with a big decline. The other thing I would say to all of this is, if it really is going to bother you when the market has a downturn, and again, this should be in your rules, you should establish this ahead of time, is maybe have a plan. Like maybe you keep, and again, this is not advice, these are just suggestions and random thoughts, but maybe keep a year of spending in cash or bonds or some other kind of thing that's not going to take a huge hit when the market takes a huge hit. So therefore, you don't have to sell stocks when the market takes a dump. And something like that is probably more important early on in your retirement due to sequence of returns. But again, have a plan and stick to it.
Why is it important to have the plan beforehand?
It's like insurance. You don't buy insurance when the hurricane is over your house or when the tornado shows up. You need to do it when your mind is in the right place, when you don't have emotions guiding your decisions. You should never let emotions guide your decisions. So you need to do it when your mind is clear and everything is good.
Yeah, for me, it's the emotional component. You know, if you can pull that out, then you won't react to, you know, the negative input or the positive input, you know, right? It happens the same way where people sit on the sidelines, right? They try to time the market just like your Taylor Swift tickets. And then the market's going up. And they're like, okay, I'm going to put my money back in, but now it's like way more expensive. And it's basically impossible. You just have to get lucky both on the way down and on the way up, right? It's really hard to do.
Yeah, you have to do it. You have to be right twice, and people don't talk about that. You'll always see the article like, meet the guy who called the whatever this big event. Well, sure, he might have gotten lucky and called that, but did he also get back in or out when the time was appropriate? Probably not.
One final thought on this. In your answer earlier, you said you should never use emotion to make decisions. What about love, man? You're a Lex Fridman fan. What about love?
What about love? I don't know. I still think with a partner, there is love, but I think that's secondary. You can love them, but if their financial house or if they've got other issues, if they have other issues, love doesn't trump all. I think love is great, but you got to have everything else in order first.
All right.
Do you think
I didn't think you were going to answer anything, but that's cool.
Do you think Taylor Swift looks at the stock market, or she just has so much money that it's completely irrelevant to her?
It's probably irrelevant. Probably irrelevant. Yeah. Do you think she would be into fire?
Yeah, for her, she is. She has her own brand of fire, Taylor Swift fire. But I think she's single, though. If there's any, I think she's got her stuff together. Like she's got a lot of money, and I don't know. Just saying.
Yeah. I wonder. I was thinking about Taylor Swift a lot because we keep talking about it. Like every few minutes, you bring it up again. You're like, oh, these tickets, all week long. But I wonder if our book would be very interesting to her, because it seems like she works really hard and she maybe needs to take it down a notch.
We'll send her a copy. Maybe we'll have a chapter or a little, probably not a chapter. She doesn't warrant. I don't think we could talk enough. Not that she doesn't warrant it, but there's not enough material for there. And she might sue us too. So we'll just have a little piece and it'll be very complimentary, but maybe a little guidance for her.
Maybe we can like adapt it to a novel where someone, a Taylor-like individual, is the protagonist of the book. So it'll be like a long parable kind of thing. We tell a story and then, I don't know, we'll think about that.
Yeah, it'll be two Fs in the last name so people don't confuse our Taylor Swift with the real Taylor Swift.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like Swift with a Y also. A Y and two Fs.
Yes.
All right. What's the next question?
Okay, next question. So before I get to this, Doug, we have exciting news. We have a Facebook group now, and that is facebook.com/groups/milehighfi. So groups, mile hi-fi. And that will get you there. If you search Facebook, I think you'll be able to find it too. And one pretty neat thing is we've had a lot of engagement already on there. I asked the people who are members if there's anything that they would like us to answer. And Chris said, how would you reallocate your investments if there were no tax implications? And he says, would you go all VTSAX, all Tesla? And that part is probably directed towards me. What do you think, Doug?
I think, yeah, I'd probably just aim for VTSAX or similar. Per my last answer, you hear I'm not too interested in looking in the day-to-day or following along with individual stocks. So yeah, I would just kind of leave it where I have everything right now. So I wouldn't change anything. What about you?
Okay, that's a good answer. I'll tackle the Tesla part first. I don't like talking about this because Elon Musk has turned into a nutter and he's a lightning rod for all kinds of shit. But with that stock, I'm going to continue to hold it because I don't think my hypothesis has played out yet. I think the company still could do great things. And if it does, I think it's got a chance of beating the overall markets. With that said, a more general comment is if you do own an individual stock, you have to prepare for that stock to go to zero. So I think my Tesla stock could do really great, but I also think the whole company could be bankrupt by 2030. And I'm okay with that. And if you do own an individual stock, you have to be okay with that too. I forgot the number, but almost every company that's ever existed in the history of the world is now worth nothing. Like how many companies that were relevant in 1950 are still relevant now? Today's empire is tomorrow's bankruptcy. And that's what makes things like VTSAX so good. You don't have to worry about any of that. It takes care of everything. So if I could reallocate, I think I would reallocate most of my things to VTSAX or maybe VGT. I've always liked the tech space. That is Vanguard's technology ETF. So I'd probably have a little bit of money in there, but VTSAX for almost all of it.
Is that like growth tech, GT? Is that?
Yeah, VGT.
Okay.
Victor, what's
Gopher? No, I don't know.
Victor Goat Taylor. There she is again.
Yeah. How much, if you're able to share, how much of your net worth is tied up in Tesla right now?
It's over 25%. I think the Tesla is like 1.2.
Okay.
And that's in pure holdings, not counting what the part that's in index funds.
And the implication is from your answer, you would be all right for that to go to zero.
Well, I surely wouldn't be happy about it, but I'm okay with it if it does. That's the risk. And I don't think that will happen. If I did, I wouldn't hold on to it. But if it does, it's not going to wreck me.
It's 25%. Yeah, huge amount. But and we've talked about it before. When I actually remember one of our earlier episodes, I was like, hey, don't you want to de-risk and like slowly start getting rid of this? And it was up higher at some point. I don't know. Where is it from its highest point ever?
Yeah, it hit 400 a share sometime, maybe 2020, and now it's like 275.
Okay. So obviously, in hindsight, I could like run the math and be like, oh, even though you would have taken a tax hit in 2020, if you would have sold half of it, you'd be ahead of where you are now, blah, 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 right?
Yep.
Do you ever go back and look at that kind of analysis?
No, I don't. What I did do, though, is I shouldn't even admit to this type of stuff, but when it did hit 100, when Musk was having all his insanity back at the end of the year and buying Twitter, I did pick up more, like maybe 400 more shares.
Okay. So it went all the way down to 100?
Yes.
Gotcha. Man, so speaking of tying to your previous answer, do you have a plan on how you get rid of Tesla in the future?
My plan is to reassess at the end of 2025. I don't know. Like the major initiatives I look forward to are there. We can get deep into the tech weeds, but no one wants to hear that. But it's their dry electro battery tech and possibly FSD, their full self-driving, which is the latter one's a long shot.
When are they supposed to deliver that stuff?
They were
by 2025.
Yeah, well, Elon Musk said FSD would be done by like the end of 2017.
Yeah. You see where I'm going? I'm like, yeah, you know, Tesla. I don't know much, but I know they usually don't deliver on time.
Yeah, they usually do deliver. Like Elon Musk usually does what he says he's going to do. It's usually just not on time.
Now he's like, I'm going to buy Twitter, and then he did that. So okay. Anything else on reallocating if there were no tax penalties? Because that's your issue, right? If you divest in Tesla, you'll have to pay a shitload of capital gains, right?
Yeah, that is true. And we've had other stocks for years. Like we've had Google since 2004 and Facebook for a long time too. And yeah, it would be a big gains hit, but it's an even bigger hit if it goes to zero and then you lose all your money.
Yeah. Interesting. So basically you'll just reevaluate in a couple of years and then see what's going on.
Yeah. I think by the end of 2025, they'll have the Cybertruck, their ugly truck, which despite that has a lot of orders, and they should have their $25,000 car out, which should be the nail in the coffin for internal combustion.
Oh, wow. The 25,000. Okay. We'll have to talk later on the drive home. So anything else on this question?
No, that's it.
All right.
Okay. Our next question comes from a conversation that you and I had over dinner. And this isn't so much of a question, but more of a conversation. So Doug, I was asking you about your siblings, and I think we were talking about this earlier this week, and you're all pretty successful. Like you mentioned, so you have two sisters, all three of you are married, all three siblings. And you said five out of six of you went to Georgia Tech, which is a pretty great accomplishment. And one of your sisters is, can I say what they do?
Sure.
One of them is a dietitian. That's a lot of advanced, difficult school. And the other one's a pharmacist, which is the same thing. So my question to you was, your parents obviously did a lot of stuff right. What do you think they did right?
Really tough question. I think I sat there for 5 minutes thinking about it before answering at dinner, which there's a Mexican place we went to, and funny thing, we finished eating and then they brought out two tequila shots for us, which we didn't order. They just brought them out. And then I think you asked the question. So tequila was in my brain too. So obviously impossible to answer. And the thing that maybe triggered it, right? You're thinking, oh, they're siblings. Some of them are really successful. Some of them aren't. Some of them, like, maybe they're twins or something, and they grew up like with the same environment and the same inputs and all that stuff, but they end up doing the opposite. So it's really interesting. So I don't know the answer to it, but I did think about a couple items. One, we were kind of middle class, like probably right in the middle of middle class. We had everything we needed. We took vacations, although they weren't like the most glamorous. I didn't fly in a plane until I was 18. Right. So that's a little unusual. I think, I'm not sure, but yeah, I didn't fly in a plane for a while. And we saw the kids, we saw our parents working and saving, and we didn't get everything we wanted, but we got a lot of stuff. Right. And seeing them work, I think was really valuable versus just like, if we got everything we wanted whenever we asked for it. The other part is my mom came from the Philippines, so she immigrated over here, didn't speak the language really well, but like made a career. She was a nurse, like many Filipino ladies. and men too, I guess, but mostly Filipino women end up in the nursing industry. We saw her work really hard and you know, kind of struggle. And I think some of the struggle is valuable to see because things are hard when you go out in the real world. Like, everything's not going to work out fine. You have to figure out how to solve problems and work hard through it. So those were the couple little things, but I'll have to think about it more. Now, what do you think? Can you lay out your family situation?
Yeah. So I was always, people look at me and think I'm successful, but I think a lot of that success comes from fear. I was always paranoid about running out of money. So the first thing I did after graduating from high school was go to college immediately, get my degree, and start working really hard. My older sister did things a little bit differently. She graduated from school and then announced to my parents that she was going to follow the Grateful Dead. And she had this hippie-looking boyfriend dude. And they were going to go to, like, have you ever heard of a rainbow festival? Or I don't know. I know there's nudity involved in this, but and drugs, lots and lots of drugs, which probably contributes to the nudity part. But anyway, she did that for a couple of years. And it took her a long time to course correct and get to school. But on the other hand, I wonder, Doug, a question back to you. Is there a happy medium in this? Like, do you wish maybe you would have taken a gap year or maybe had a little bit more fun in between when you were young? Like, I remember staying in hostels when I was already out there working, but there was all these like gap year European kids that were like 18 and 19. I'm like, man, that maybe I should have done that and let it rip a little bit more than I did. What do you think?
Before I answer, you were the oldest, right?
Yes.
So I'm the middle child. So you're the oldest and you have two younger sisters.
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to lay that out. Some people, other middle children, often we connect. We're like, oh, we're the forgotten child or whatever. So as far as taking it easy gap year, like basically between either like high school and college or college and your career, I did a pretty good job. So when I got to Georgia Tech, I didn't love it. There's not, when I went there, I think it was like 75% male. So 25% female. And that made it less fun. It made it less fun than other colleges, in my opinion. Some people had a good time, but I had to work really hard. Anyway, the point is I got to Georgia Tech and I was like, I need to get away from this environment and do other stuff. So I was like trying to get jobs at like restaurants or retail, like over the summer. And then I started interning. The point being, I didn't go to school and get out really quickly. A lot of my friends, they didn't have AP credits and whatever. They got out in like 3 years, 3.5 years. I got out in almost six. So I did the co-op program, which is actually good. You go to school for a term and then you work for a term and you just alternate for a few years. Some people do it all the way until they graduate, but I stopped towards the end. The other thing is I went through a breakup and I was like, I got to get out of town. So instead of interning one summer, I came out to the Rocky Mountain National Park and worked in the Trail Ridge store up there. And I enjoyed it so much that I went back the next year too. So after about halfway through my college career, I realized it'll be way more fun if I just stretch this out and stay in school a little bit longer. So I also cut my workload too. So instead of taking like 15 or 16 hours per term, I was taking like the minimum. I would take 12. So if you tie this all together, we've been talking about our book and laziness and quiet quitting. I was like quiet quitting in college. I was like, this sucks. I'm going to make this take longer. I don't want to get a job. So yeah, it's funny. You tie it all together in hindsight. I'm like, oh yeah. I've always been looking for the easy route.
So you're happy with your path if you could do it over again?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to lay out the context, but I realized that I didn't take a gap year, but I could like take it in small pieces. And like when I quit jobs and switched, I had like weeks off. I think I had 6 weeks off at one point when I was switching jobs. A lot of people, they'll set it up where they don't have any time off. I'm like, what the fuck? This is the opportunity for you to just do whatever you want. So, all right, what do you think? Your question was gap year. So you think you should have slowed down a bit.
Yeah. So here's an amazing fact, Doug. I retired and quit working in April of 2017. I was 43. And in my whole work career, I never had more than 1 week off, like not more than a week off. And what I would do is like, I'd quit a job and I'd have like leftover vacation days, which they would pay me out for. So instead of, here's how I should have thought about it. I should have been like, well, I've got some extra money, you know, why don't I just, and I had savings too. Like, why don't I just take a month off? It'd be easy to tell the next job, like, hey, I'll start like in a month from now. But instead, the way I looked at it was, well, if I start right after I quit, then I'm kind of getting like two paychecks for like a couple of weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, I should have taken it a little bit easier, taken more time off and maybe even taken substantial time off along the way, like a sabbatical or like a summer off or something like that.
Yeah. And that's, I guess that's the big takeaway for people that find themselves in the opportunity or have an opportunity to take some time off between jobs, or maybe in college, I don't know if young people listen to the show, I'd be surprised, but we talk about Taylor Swift all the time. Yeah. So maybe they do, but yeah, if you could take some time off, and yeah, every time I switched a job, I always did that. I would, often like max out vacation time. So instead of, I wouldn't take the full amount of time. Maybe I would just do like 80%, something like that. So I still was able to bank a little bit and feel good about that, but I would travel and just do whatever.
Cool.
Yeah.
You were better adjusted than I was.
Thank you for saying that, but you always mention like the scarcity mindset and you're still, you know, pulling out of it in some areas, I think, but like that, I guess I didn't have that, right? So I was just like, oh, I'll be able to get a job in the future. I even had during these travel times in college or whatever, I was like doing stuff. I was like running up some credit card debt and like on the surface, and even looking back, I'm like, oh, should I have done that? But I see like that was the time. I can't go back to that time. It was good that I had those experiences and did whatever during those, you know, those years in my 20s.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Do what Doug did and not as I did.
I just got lucky. So, all right. Anything else on that one?
I don't think so. We have two more things to talk about. The first one is Camp Fies, and another one is imposter syndrome, which I added at the very end. Did you see that I threw that in there, Doug? Okay, yeah. Good. So I'm thinking about Camp Fi. I can't stop thinking about Taylor Swift. Do you think she would come to the next Camp Fi if we comp her a ticket? And wait, maybe. To back up a second, it might not be a good idea because we have karaoke and she would just annihilate everyone and then no one would want to do it, right?
She seems super nice. I bet she would like just sing with people and make it a great experience. Yeah. So yeah, it's worth asking, you know, gotta ask.
We'll send her people a note. This is a $475 value and the food's good, your lodging, everything. It's all inclusive. You don't have to do anything. All you have to do is show up.
Just show up. Yeah. Will you pay for her transportation as well?
I would. If she agreed to go, I would pay for it. Not like anything fancy. I can't, like no private jet or anything like that, but I'll get her like business class on Frontier. Okay. Is there such a thing?
Probably not on Frontier. Like you might be able to board earlier, but you still can't bring a bag.
How about Spirit? That might be even worse.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah, you have to work on that.
Yeah. Anyway, so I wanted to talk a little bit about Camp Fies. We attended, there were two in Rocky Mountain. That's Colorado Springs. We attended the full version of camp of the first week, and we went to one night of the second week. We showed up on our way here. What was your experience like?
I've been talking a lot. I'll let you answer first. I don't know if I have been talking a lot, but yeah, what was your experience?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. One funny thing with Camp Fies and maybe the whole financial independence stuff is I thought this would be a part of my life where I dip into it, get my money right, and then I'd exit and then move on with my life. And here I am 10 years later, still doing things like Camp Fies and still giving talks at them as well, which I told myself I wasn't going to do, but yeah, I really enjoy them. I was thinking about both weeks and I had three thoughts. The first one is I still learn stuff. I was talking to Eric and Darren about early withdrawal strategies and we're talking about 72 Ts. Are you familiar with the 72 T, Doug?
Only from talking to those guys, but explain it. It's a rarely used tool.
Yeah. So it allows you to take distributions from your 401k before you are 59 and a half, or some even allow for 55, but you can take them at any time. But it's a little bit of a convoluted process. You have to state what you're going to withdraw and you have to stick to that plan. So once you set the thing in motion, I don't think there's any going back. And we'll talk more about this in a future episode. I think we're going to have an early withdrawal episode that was recommended or asked by another person on our Facebook group. But it is pretty interesting, and I'd kind of forgotten about it until Eric and Darren mentioned it. So I still go to these things, and I still learn valuable stuff. And if you learn one tidbit like that, like it can make the price of the thing worth it just for there. The second thing is there's just a lot of fun people there, right? Like we do talk about 72 T's and stuff like that, but more often than not, we're screwing around and just having a good time. I already have plans to see, I think, at least three of the people I met from the Camp FIs. One's coming to stay at our house. I'm going to see our weather person, Kristen, in St. Louis soon, and a couple other people from St. Louis as well. So that's what really makes it fun, and that's why I keep on going. And for me, I guess it's still a little bit of an ego boost. It's nice to go in there and give a talk and help people. I got a real nice message from some people saying, oh, I brought my wife here and I don't think she wanted to come. He was into the FI stuff. And he's like, she started crying during your talk and you changed the way she thinks about all this. I'm like, that's great. Fantastic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Your talk.
Yeah, and maybe she was crying because of the poor quality of it and maybe not because of the content.
No, it was good. You did great. You did great. It was a new talk, right?
It was a new talk.
And yeah, it's super cool just overall. So anything else with Camp FI, and then I'll give my answer.
No, I think that's it for me.
Okay. I went for the first time, I think, was it just 2 years ago? And I've been to four and a half now. So we went to all of week one a couple of weeks ago, and then on our way down here to Leadville, we stopped by for this Sunday night and hung out with people. So can't get enough of them. They're super fun. You know, stay up a little bit too late often, particularly that Sunday night the other day. But there is some financial talk, of course, but it's usually just other stuff. And there's enough people where you're going to have someone that shares your interest. So whether it's whatever, knitting or hiking or international travel or craft beer, like what was his name? Derek brought some homebrew and he was like, oh, you're a beer judge. So we like sampled some of his beer. So like there's a cool Venn diagram where you're going to have a lot of common interest with other people. And a lot of folks are afraid that they're a little too introverted. They don't want to go to like a summer camp for adults, but it's cool. Everyone says they're introverted just about, and everyone is talking all the time. There's always a conversation going on, and it is overwhelming at times because it's like a constant, you know, there's always some conversation going on, but it's super easy to just like go on a walk by yourself, go back to your room and recharge. So I did that one time, and I think you hiked alone a few times, right?
Yes.
Just to kind of clear your mind or whatever. So one of the other things that keeps me going back, you know, we learn some stuff occasionally, but it's the people that we've met over the years from different locations. So you show up at a Camp FI and it's like, oh, I met you in Florida or something at a Camp FI previously. And it's pretty cool to have, because they're sort of loose ties, but like you have a lot in common. And like the more you see someone in those like kind of weekend retreats, it's so rare when you spend like multiple hours with someone, and the Camp FIs give you an opportunity to do it. So one other thought, or do you have something to say in response?
No.
Okay. One thing, I can't remember who said it, but I think it was a prominent podcaster. I won't say who I think it is, but basically they were like, I did the FI stuff. I did the fire thing, and I want to do other stuff. So they like don't go to events like Camp FI or even FinCon or other stuff like that because they want to focus elsewhere, which is cool. I mean, I've kind of done that with beer to some extent. That used to be my social group. I knew a bunch of people at breweries. I knew a bunch of judges. I judged all the time. And I just kind of burned out, moved a couple times. And like, I haven't added that back in. Instead, I have like another community in Longmont with the FI community, really. But I found it interesting that this person felt like most of the conversations at like a Camp FI were financial. And I'm like, oh, like you were around, like, you know, we all have many different interests. I'm kind of surprised that they were like, I want to move on to something else. But I'll tell you who it is off the air. But I think it could be that they were so well known that it's kind of awkward sometimes. Like if everyone is putting them on a pedestal because they're like a figurehead or something like that, then it's kind of odd. So
yeah, that is a weird statement, because the thought I've had is people worry about going to Camp Phi because they don't want to talk about money the whole time. And you hardly ever talk about that, actually. It's mostly other better conversations.
Yeah. So in a quick left turn, the other thing is, I can't remember if we talked about it on the show. We probably did mention it, but week one, there were excellent salsa dancers and we spent time like dancing. It was unusual. Steven said that was the first time that happened, but it was pretty fun overall. I got more people out of their shell too.
Yeah, it was great. I did not dance, but I watched it and yeah, you did good.
Thanks. Good enough.
Yeah. So one other thing about Camp Phi, I'm going to go to the one in Joshua Tree.
Do you know the dates for that?
I think that one is the first weekend in October. It might be October 6th. And I've never been to that one, but I guess it's a super cool venue and it's near San Diego. So I'm going to hang out there a lot with David Boyer, who's been on the show, Mr. Phiology.
Cool. Yeah, that'll be fun. I don't think I won't be able to go to that when I have some other travel around that time, but that'll be a blast. I think that'll be a cool location. Probably a lot of different people. I think a lot of folks, like, you know, there were a lot of people at the Rocky Mountain from sort of the Midwest. So several people from St. Louis, some folks from Oklahoma, and I guess California is going to bring like a lot of California crew, right?
Yeah, we'll see what that brings. One other point is these Camp Phis, it's always a pretty neat mix of people. Like I think Steven said, about 25% of the people were new. And then there's other people who've been to like 8 or 10 of them like myself. So it's pretty cool to have that mix of people. It's not just a bunch of old friends. There's always new people. And the other thing I'll say in closing about the Phi community and these types of things, and the comment about the person who wanted to move away, is the Phi community makes it so easy to plug into. Like if you want to meet people, you can just go to an event at the HQ. We'll put our meetup group in the show notes, or just sign up for a Camp Phi. I mean, you'll have new friends by the end of any of these events. So it's really easy to plug into.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's super welcoming. So, yeah. All right, what's next?
Okay. The last one I snuck in here at the last moment is imposter syndrome. So Doug, we're up here writing our book, and we've talked a couple times about this because we've never written a book. Like I'm an amateur author, very amateur. I know you've written some longer form stuff, but a book is a whole different ballgame. And I don't know how you feel, but sometimes you're writing and you feel great. Like, this is awesome. It's all flowing. And then other times you're like, man, I'm not qualified to write a coloring book. Like, yeah, what am I doing here? Is this whole thing just a folly, like a ridiculous task? Yeah. What are your thoughts on imposter syndrome?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely feel that. And we have been vlogging some while we're writing up here. So there are some updates. So if you look on our YouTube channel, you'll see those. But I talked yesterday in one of those vlog sessions where I was like, I'm going to use ChatGPT to do this portion of it, which makes you feel like a imposter completely. Cause I'm like, I'm not even fucking writing like the core piece of this. I was putting in like an outline and like what my story is, but it puts it into like narrative form. So saves a lot of time. And yeah, so that made me feel like an imposter for sure. It doesn't go away. Like everyone that I've talked to, they're like, yeah, it just gets bigger or whatever. And we recently, you and I did a joint talk at FinTalks. Amberly Grant puts that on, and pretty decent sized crowd, probably like 75 people or something like that. And yeah, I remember standing up there and I'm just like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, am I going to remember? I was telling you, I'm like, I hope I'm just going to remember what to say. Because we did the presentation literally the day before, right? But I think, I mean, it worked out okay. And I guess that's what you have to do, is like, you get up, you feel like you're going to fail. Like, why are people even listening to me? And then it works out okay. And you're like, okay, I can do this. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on the imposter syndrome and how you deal with it, you know?
Yeah, it's weird. I think with writing, you just have to force yourself to do it. I guess the hard thing about this longer form content is like a 500 word blog post is, it's not easy, but it's not that difficult either. Where something like this, we have 25 to 50,000 words that all have to tie together and the chapters have to be congruent and we have to reconcile our different voices. So there's a lot of moving parts. But what gives me confidence is I think we're both pretty good. But if we're not, we have someone experienced, MK, who's going to do a great job of making us look decent, even if we look like crap with our first iteration. Well, one thing I'm curious about is how different the initial draft will look like from the final draft.
Hopefully a lot. Hopefully very different. Well, and we went out for a walk at Turquoise Lake. It's just a reservoir up the street here. And I think we were both like, we have the imposter syndrome. We're like, why are we writing a book? You know, we kept talking about it. We booked this place and then like, it's just escalated. And then eventually we're going to have like a book. There's going to be movie rights, I'm sure. But we were even talking like, we want to make sure it's really good before we even give it to MK. Like we're like, we want to make sure like we do as good of a job as we can before we even give it to the person who's supposed to help us out to make it better. So I mean, I feel the pressure with that too. So have you felt pressure knowing that I can just hop into our Google folder and start reading your stuff?
I do feel pressure and I don't know if you have, and I really don't want you to until I give you the go ahead. Cause my initial versions are always really rough. A lot of times just a bunch of random thoughts, and then I have to make it into something readable. So right. The first iteration, if you have looked and you've thought, oh my God, who have I partnered with? The final thing, a lot of times, even with a stupid blog post, I'll have like 50 iterations of it with 500 words. So the final product will look much different than the original.
I haven't read any. I just opened one of the documents just to make sure there was something in there.
Yeah, good. There are a couple where there is nothing in there. Okay. Yeah. I was doing my word count today. I saw you did the word count and I opened mine. I'm like, okay, I'm up to this many words. This is going good. And then a couple of mine had zero words in there.
How many words are you up to today as of today?
I think I got through close to 4,000 the past couple of days.
Nice.
Which is good. And I don't even think, I don't think I've hit my stride yet. It felt good to be up here, but just come off such a busy period. I'm tired and there were a lot of distractions up here, like going hiking. So if I could, real quick, I was thinking when we were talking earlier, if I could do this trip, like my perfect version of doing this writing retreat would be probably maybe 2 or 3 weeks. Some days we write tons of words. Other days we don't write any and go hike a 14er. And it would seem like now I felt a little bit of a sense of urgency. Like I have to justify this and get some words out. It would be neat if it was a little bit more relaxing. And I think it was, but not quite enough.
I agree 100%. I mean, I was on vacation a couple weeks ago for about a week and then went straight to Camp Fi week one and then went home for like 3 days and then headed back out. So it's just been a whirlwind. We keep joking like, hey, what day is it? I don't fucking know what day it is. Like it's super odd. And I haven't slept in my own bed very often in the last few weeks. It reminds me of vacation where it's like vacation feels best for me with a slow travel, about 3 weeks to maybe 5 to 6 weeks or so. Cause it takes what, 3-4 days to just chill the fuck out, get used to the area and develop a bit of a routine, which I really enjoy a routine. We were only here for 3 nights, right? And it was right after Camp Fi and all this stuff we're talking about. So I feel exactly what you're talking about. There was some urgency. And yeah, I think a few weeks would be perfect. And that kind of schedule where it's like maybe unwind for a couple of days, get ready to do what you're about to do. Some days are like completely free. We don't even turn on our lap. Like we intentionally turn off our laptops or whatever. So I think that's a good way to approach it. Now, we've talked about going to write at Panera, and I think, so I'll be heading out of town in about 3 weeks again for another several weeks, But I think if we can go, we don't have to go every day, right? But if we can go, say, 4 days per week for, say, 90 minutes to 2 hours, I bet we can get a shitload done. That's how I wrote before we got here. That's what I did. I didn't spend a huge amount of time any one day, but I just consistently like wrote for an hour or two, 4 or 5 days a week. That was it. So what do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that's great. And I'm thinking about this week coming up. Friday, I'll either be at the Taylor Swift concert or standing outside the stadium waiting for my kid to come out. And Saturday morning, so we're staying overnight in Denver. Saturday morning is off, but maybe like Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. 4 or 5 of those days, and maybe all 5 of them would be great. Like, let's do it.
Okay. So let me just, anything else on writing before we take a left turn here?
No, I think that's it.
So you're going to be hanging outside the Taylor Swift concert by yourself? Just trolling around?
Like a creepy old guy. There'll probably be a lot of us too, I suspect.
I guess
like
so.
Just a bunch of dads out there, like up till 1 in the morning. I don't look forward to it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're right. There'll be a lot of, maybe they put you all in like one spot where it's like, you know, pick up your kid area, like a school or something.
Yeah. Herd us into a pen.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think, is there anything else? Well, imposter syndrome overall. So do you sense it with speaking or when you go to events or something like that?
I used to a lot more with speaking and maybe a little bit. The hard thing with speaking is you're up there and I don't like being viewed as a source of authority, if that makes sense. You don't want like people hanging on your word. So that gives me anxiety. That's why I try to make my talks more fun than anything else. Maybe there's a lesson in there, but the talk I would never want to do is getting up there and saying, you should do this or this or this. And that would just feel deeply uncomfortable. So maybe the writing will get easier over time, like speaking has.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. All right. Right after this, I'm going to clean up all the cables and stuff laying around. One good thing working together, I think we have the same level of messiness or at least comfort with messiness. So it's like, I don't mind that, you know, stuff is laying around because my stuff, like your hat and sunglasses, like mine are sitting right over there. So I feel pretty good about that. You as well?
Yeah, it's good. We're kind of like light slobs, maybe slobs light, L-I-T-E. We're not super slobs. I did wash dishes, but yeah, we're okay.
We have more space here. Like when we've shared like a hotel room, like you can't let it get too messy because it's very small. But here there's plenty of room to just like lay stuff around. Hotel room, we keep in our little corner. So yeah.
If we had a room at the Motel 6, I don't think this would have gone nearly as good. We would have gotten angry. There would have been tension. Probably would have gone for a lot longer walks alone.
All right. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High 5 podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do 3 things for us. Number 1, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number 2, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number 3, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week.
So we're here in Leadville. We've been here for a few days. We're heading out this morning. What do you think of town? You get to spend a few hours walking around and all that.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I always, whenever I leave a place, I ask myself if I'd like to go back and if I've left stuff on the table. I feel like I have barely scratched the surface on on this town. Last night I went hiking. I was way up in the trails. I think they're actually mountain bike trails. But anyway, I was looking at the map and I'm like, holy crap, the trails go way up. Like I could spend days here and that's just on that one part of town. So I can't wait to make it back. And we didn't accomplish one of our primary goals either, Doug, and that was to get that Melanzana, like, nice hoodie.
Right.
We had to get the imposter one.
Right. Which they seem okay, but, you know, we'll have to see how the manufacturing is on these. What are they called? Sky Goat?
Yeah. Sky Goat, Scapegoat, Scrapegoat. No, it's Sky Goat.
Sky Goat. Yeah. It's a cool town. And there's a 14er that's really close by called Mount Sherman. It's only like 20 minutes to the trailhead. So you could actually wake up at a normal time, go out there, hike it. And it's only, I think it's like a little over 5 miles round trip. And then you have Massive and Elbert. So like I've hardly done any of the, whatever the hiking that you could do around here. Now, one thing, when I was walking around the downtown, I didn't go as far out as you did, but walking around the downtown, it's small. The town is small enough. The restaurants don't like lock up their tables. I don't know if you noticed that, like in most places that I've ever lived, any restaurants that have things outside, they like chain up the tables with either chains or cables because people will steal all the stuff. But these are just sitting outside. Did you happen to notice that?
No, I didn't, but that's a great observation.
Yeah, it's a small town and the places where you're hiking, I feel like it's so deserted and it's such a small town and we're way up high in the mountains. It's the kind of place where a true crime show starts. You know what I mean?
It would probably be a great place to commit a crime, right? Because they wouldn't see it coming.
Yeah, and there's just, yeah, there's mines up there and yeah.
Lots of places to hide a body.
Yeah. All right. That's a weird note to end on, but it's a great town. People should swing by. It's like a couple hours from the Denver area. And yeah, it's just like a bunch of outdoorsy kind of people. Like, yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Come for the outdoor recreation, not murder.
Yeah.